Yesterday, August 6th, was the 61st anniversary of the Voting Rights Act of 1965, the law that effectively made it possible for Black Americans to vote in the South and expanded voting opportunities for Americans across the country. It's a bit of a bittersweet anniversary because after the Supreme Court's decision in Calavi, Louisiana, for all intents and purposes, the operative parts of the Voting Rights Act no longer exist. They have been destroyed. Beginning in 2013, the Supreme Court began a long march against the Voting Rights Act, often fabricating new doctrines designed to blunt its impact. In Shelby County v. Louisiana, for example, the court created this idea that the federal government must treat all states equally, and thus it was unfair for Alabama and other states in the South to remain covered by the preclearance formula in Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. In that opinion, John Roberts said that the South had changed and there was no longer any need for this kind of prophylactic. Antonin Scalia was a little more honest in oral arguments when he said that the law was a racial entitlement and that if they did not get rid of it, lawmakers never would because they'd be too afraid of being called racist. And one of the other ways the court has gone against the Voting Rights Act has been to radically narrow what constitutes racial discrimination in voting. The Voting Rights Act was passed to operationalize the 15th Amendment to the Constitution, which simply states that the right to vote shall not be abridged by race or color, and that Congress can affect this amendment by all appropriate legislation. In 1982, Congress passed an amendment to the Voting Rights Act, which created what's called a results test, that what mattered when it came to racial discrimination in voting was not the intent of lawmakers, but the result of the action. If a new voting law or regulation resulted in the voting power of racial minorities being reduced or diluted or outright eliminated, it didn't really matter what the intent of the lawmakers was. What mattered was the result. Congress did this because it's notoriously difficult to prove intent. Even during the height of Jim Crow, lawmakers weren't so stupid as to put into writing that they were explicitly trying to remove Black people from the voting rolls. The only way to deal with racial discrimination in voting is by focusing on the effects. Not only has the Supreme Court effectively nullified that results test in a series of rulings, the court basically said that unless you can prove that the rationale for a given set of voting restrictions was explicitly and exclusively racist, which means that not only does it have to be on paper or in some kind of record, but it has to have been the only rationale. Unless you can prove that, then courts ought to defer to the legislature. This year, in response to a district court's finding in Alabama v. Milligan that the state of Alabama did discriminate against voters on the basis of race quite explicitly, Sam Alito, the author of Louisiana v. Calais, said explicitly that the court can find some kind of non-racist reason for doing this, then even if the legislature did not articulate it, the court must treat that reason as controlling. The Supreme Court has made proving intent impossible and has raised the bar for intent so high that even if you had the documents in hand, it probably wouldn't work out for you. Why has the Supreme Court, why have conservatives, why have reactionaries been so eager to destroy the Voting Rights Act? What they'll say is that they're trying to bring the principle of colorblindness into American law, that the Voting Rights Act was some kind of, in Scalia's words again, racial entitlement. That recognizing the history, consequences, and still present-day effects of racial discrimination in voting is somehow counter to the Constitution, despite the fact that the Constitution has the 15th Amendment right there. But this vision of colorblindness, of anti-classification, is found nowhere in the Constitution.
It's totally made up. Pure fiction. It's fiction. It's fiction. We made it up. We made this one up. It's a made-up tale. It's a total fabrication.
It certainly wasn't in the minds of the people who wrote the 14th and 15th Amendments, who wrote them explicitly to deal with the subordination of the formerly enslaved, and to, in the words of Charles Sumner, one of the key advocates for these amendments, eliminate color caste from the United States. The point of these amendments was to ameliorate the effects of slavery and racism, and to allow Congress to do so, to give Congress the tools it needed to do exactly this. The Voting Rights Act represents one of those tools, a judgment by Congress to deal with what Congress feels are the continuing effects of racism in our political life. This gets a little to why conservatives and reactionaries hate the law. because it is an explicit attack on the kinds of received hierarchies of race and also of gender and of class that they seek to uphold. It is no accident that the introduction of millions of Black Americans into the electorate, into the political system, opened the doors to the expansion of rights for many, many tens of millions of Americans who were not Black, of immigrants and migrant workers and LGBTQ Americans, of women, of the disabled, of many, many people. There is a connection in this country between the rights of Black Americans and the rights of all other Americans, between the ability of Black Americans to exercise their full rights, their full place in this country, and a country that is more open to the rights and participation of many others. And if you belong to a political movement that sees the expansion of those rights as a threat to your wealth and to your status, then of course you target the law that makes so much of that possible. Not only would you target the law, but as this Supreme Court has done, you would even articulate a doctrine that says that no, it's the court that determines what is appropriate legislation and not Congress. I could go on and on about the attack on the Voting Rights Act, about the damage that's been done, but that's not all that constructive. In part because I've already done that video, you should check that out. What's more constructive is now to say what can be done. On the Supreme Court end, what could be done, obviously, is expanding the court. And it's interesting so far that two potential presidential contenders on the Democratic side, Pete Buttigieg and Kamala Harris, have come out in support of expanding the court. And I expect this to be a standard position among Democratic presidential candidates. But as much as I support expanding the court as a way to immediately deal with this attack on the Voting Rights Act, and I would say to address the fact that several of these Supreme Court seats were obtained by gaming the system, as much as I support that, I do think that there is a problem and a danger with court expansion, and that is it. And that is that it reifies the idea that the court is the ultimate arbiter of our rights, that the court, in the end, determines what the Constitution means. And I just don't think that's true. I don't think that's the case. And so because I don't think that's the case, I think there are things to be done legislatively, which is to say things to be done through public action, through political action, that are just as important, if not more important, than changing the composition of the courts. There is nothing stopping states from passing state-level voting rights acts. Here in Virginia, we have one, and that should be a priority. Passing state-level voting rights acts wherever possible to put into state law and even in the state constitutions, if you do this by constitutional amendment or referendum, the basic provisions of the Voting Rights Act, protecting the right of all Americans to vote, or at least all Americans in that state. I think Congress should pass a new Voting Rights Act, one that restores provisions destroyed by the Supreme Court and explicitly affirms Congress's right, exclusive right, to say what constitutes appropriate legislation. And if the current court strikes that down, let them. Let them strike down a duly passed law of Congress and set up a political battle over who has the right to interpret the Constitution. Because I do think that the fight over voting rights in this country, the fight over the Voting Rights Act over the past 10 years, is part of a larger fight over constitutional meaning and who has the right to make constitutional meaning. Core to the conservative project is the idea that the Supreme Court and really a handful of elite lawyers from a handful of elite schools with a handful of elite backgrounds, that they have the exclusive right to say what the Constitution means and that they are, in fact, the law. But this notion that the Supreme Court and this tiny cabal of justices, this notion that the Constitution belongs to them, runs counter to most of this country's history. Throughout the 19th century and much of the 20th century, it was taken for granted that the public and its representatives had a huge say in determining what the Constitution meant. In the 19th century especially, constitutional meaning was seized by the public and its representatives after decisions like Dred Scott. And the public did this through ordinary political action, voting, supporting candidates who called for constitutional reform, for court reform, voicing their views directly to the justices sometimes, and by having the representatives pass legislation, by Congress operating and working in such a way as to affirm its own right to interpret the Constitution and to challenge the court. So much of the court's power right now owes itself to the fact that Congress has been subordinate and supine in relation to both the executive branch and the courts. A Congress that asserts its power that acts vigorously, that articulates its own constitutional vision, is not one that will necessarily run roughshod over the court, but is one that will force the court into a confrontation that I think it will lose. Because at the end of the day, it is just 9 people. When it comes to the conservative majority, it's just 6. 6 people who have gotten comfortable and arrogant and really are not equipped for a genuine political battle. I've talked about all the many ways you could discipline the court through legislation, but perhaps the most important thing you could do is just to pass laws and to dare the court to act. I think that in that game of chicken, they will back down. And if they don't, then we have the right and the power to change the court as we see fit. The Voting Rights Act might be dead right now, but still, long live the Voting Rights Act, and long live a country that at least tries to live up to its aspirations. I'll see you next time.